Oh, hold up. Smell test. Go ahead. Sniff those pits. Now, your bits. Feet, toes, come on. Ugh. Could be fresher, right? It's all good. Old Spice Total Body Deodorant Spray is gentle enough to use all over your body, giving you 24/7 lasting freshness with daily use, from pits to toes and down below. So every smell test gets a... Shop for Old Spice Total Body Deodorant.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. Kay Murray, Shaka Hislop and Stevie Nicol here. And we start the show on a somber note. Queen Elizabeth II has passed away at Balmoral in Scotland on Thursday. She was the longest serving monarch. Gab Marcotti joining us now from England to talk a little bit more about today's news. It's obviously a sad day back in England, Gab, but I think for many people who aren't based in the UK, they won't know the relevance of the relationship between English football and the royal family.
It's certainly always been there. I think the majority of the royals wouldn't profess to be football fans, but they've always been supportive of the FA. Certainly Prince William, I believe he still is the sort of honorary chairman, active in the past when they were bidding for events like the 2018 World Cup. Those of us who are old might even remember a certain Jurgen Klinsmann receiving his Euro 1996 trophy from the Queen herself. So I think the support was always kind of within the sphere of the Queen. She was supportive of her country. She was here to serve her country and all things British. And obviously football, because of its history, very much something that belongs to Britain and has tremendous affinity with the country.
What does this mean, Gab, then, for the Premier League fixtures this weekend? Obviously, the country's in mourning.
Well, we're kind of uncharted territory here, obviously, because, as you mentioned before, she was one of the longest-serving monarchs ever, or the longest-serving monarch since 1953. The sort of the protocols for the mourning are still being worked on. The Football League fixtures in the lower divisions that were scheduled for Friday have already been postponed. The thinking is that it's likely that the Premier League games this weekend will also be postponed, although, of course, the calendar is extremely, extremely tight. But that hasn't been announced yet. That hasn't been decided yet. Part of the thinking right now about why they don't want to, you know, announce too many things too quickly is that the thinking is it's a time to grieve. But the Department of Culture, Media and Sport, who is responsible for these decisions, is in talks with the Premier League.
Gabriele Marcotti, thank you so much for joining us. Queen Elizabeth II has died at 96. Following the sacking of Thomas Tuchel, Graham Potter has been appointed as Chelsea's new manager on a five-year deal, leaving his role at Brighton to take the position. We now welcome in Frank Leboeuf to talk more about this. Frank, I'm interested to know whether you like this move and whether you think it was the right time to get rid of Thomas Tuchel.
It's always sad to see somebody leaving, especially so early after seeing him winning the Champions League a year after. But it already happened in the worst effect to Roberto Di Matteo as well. I think it was like a couple of months after winning the Champions League. So it's like usual for Chelsea to be able to sack many coaches and try to be successful as well. It's better sooner than never or later. But Chelsea needed to react and make sure that they go back on track and make sure that it gets at least in the first fourth position in the league. Graham Potter seems to be the guy. I'm happy to see somebody not with a big resume, somebody who has to prove at the biggest level, but somebody with thoughts in his head and willing to do everything to do better for the club and also better for himself. So I'm very interested to see how he's going to work. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Chelsea changing the way they play being more vertical. And I think Graham Potter is a right guy for the right time.
But just picking up on what you said, though, there, Frank, obviously this is a completely different team. Yes, he's had this great stint at Brighton, but now this is Chelsea. Will the players respect him? Is this a risk from the board?
I don't think it is. I think the players, well, if they look at themselves in the mirror, they realize that they didn't do well. So Tuchel has been sacked because of his decision, but sacked also because of the poor performances of the players. So the players, they know that, and they need to react. And also they will have to play to please Potter, because there are more than 11 players in the dressing room. So they will have to seduce him in order to be on the field on Saturday and Tuesday or Wednesday in the Champions League. So there is no time to think through and say, oh, well, you know, that guy is completely unknown, I'm a big star, he will have to play me. Because alongside the guy who think that, you have 20 other players who think the same, or who might think the same. So I think everybody have to be ready for a big competition, and Potter is going to be the man. And they will have to make sure that they work hard to be in the first 11. Otherwise, they're going to be on the bench.
As for the manager, though, Shaka, you wonder how long he will be given to try and implement his style and his ideas on this side, because we've seen already under this Bowley era too, patience isn't too long.
Yeah, well, temptation is to say, well, he's got 5 years to prove his worth to the club. But under Todd Bowley, it's business as usual. We wondered what Chelsea would look like in terms of their approach, given the change of ownership. We knew what it was under Abramovich, and we just wondered what direction Todd Bowley would take it. And he's been quite clear in that announcement. For me, the sacking of Thomas Tuchel makes no sense, unless you are piling all the failure of Romelu Lukaku on Tuchel's doorstep, unless you're adding in the fact that he couldn't get the best out of Timo Werner. I know it wasn't his signing, but then the easy speculation was he would get the best out of him, and clearly didn't. Other than that, it makes absolutely no sense. We've sat here all season and said Chelsea need a striker. They get one in, and in less than 90 minutes, Thomas Tuchel is out the door. So from that footballing perspective, it makes absolutely no sense. For Graham Potter, I think it's a good signing, but the one caveat to that is football management is such an inexact science. Just because you are doing brilliantly at Brighton doesn't mean that you'll do as well at Chelsea or the big clubs. But it is the most valuable of proving grounds. That and European action to me. If you can take a club, a smaller club, and compete in European football, I think that is as clear an indicator as you can get. Of course, Brighton didn't get any European football, but just the style, the method, the way he did things at Brighton makes him worthy of at least taking that gamble. And Chelsea have clearly put themselves in a position where they now have to make gambles.
Will it translate, do you think, Stevie, what we've seen from Potter at Brighton? There's no doubting that he's a talented coach, but is it bad timing for him? It's been a stumbling start, and now there's European football thrown into the mix too.
Listen, you never get a job like this at the perfect time. You only get a job like this when things are going awfully wrong. And yes, the perfect time for any manager would be at the end of one season, so he can have pre-season, but he won't have that. But at the end of the day, and I think I said it yesterday, Thomas Tuchel got the Chelsea job because he was supposedly a great coach. Everybody said he was a difficult guy to get on with. Well, Graham Potter's a great coach. We know Graham Potter's a great coach. We know that Graham Potter can win games in the Premier League with the best of them. And we know he's actually a good guy. He's very amiable, and he does get on with people. So, yes, if you look at the resume, it's a gamble, but it's not really. You're talking about a guy who knows the Premier League inside out. This is not a case of going and getting somebody who's been coaching in Russia or France or wherever. This guy knows the league inside out. He knows the players inside out as well. Now, yes, when you train with players, you see things that you don't normally see when you're playing against them. But he knows everything about every single one of them. So why can't he put this team together? Except, he's got the chance.
Except managing a superstar ego. It's one thing knowing the Premier League, but then when it comes to managing big egos now, that's going to be a whole different part of it, isn't
well,
it?
Well, managing big... To me, managing big egos is about your own moral compass. What's right and what's wrong. And you stick then to that. And half of managing big egos is knowing what you're talking about as far as what's going on in the field. You know, happy player, you know... Happy player's not going to cause you problems off the field. So if you can get your job right, which he can and will, I'm sure, then you're not going to have all these other problems. So I think this is a great appointment, and I'm sure he'll do well.
Speaking of big egos, we do have a World Cup winner, Frank Leboeuf, with us. Frank, what do you think of that aspect of things? That obviously he's going to be managing much bigger name players now.
Yes, of course, but I don't think you have to separate stars and megastars. Megastars, it's Mbappe, Neymar, Messi, Ronaldo, which I understood that it was very difficult to manage because you really have to build the team around them. I don't think there is that type of player at Chelsea right now. Like I never felt, you know, when I was in a dressing room that I played with Zola, Gullit, Viali, Di Matteo, Mark Hughes, and so many others, Dennis Wise, they were stars. But I tell you, when the coach was saying something and they were bad, they knew that they were bad, they put their head down and they didn't respond to the coach. So I think with the team I see, I don't see any problem coming from the players towards Mr. Potter. Because I think you have players who have to prove everything again. And I have to say that, yes, we live in a world of emergency. But there is also time to build something, especially a relationship, and to make sure the team is better. Because right now, again, if the players look at themselves in the mirror, they're not good enough. And I think Potter can say that the first day. It's not good enough for the talent that you have. What you presented to the audience and to the fans is not enough. So everybody with me, we're going to move forward and we're going to work together. And if I have a big star and think he's better than anybody else, he's going to be on the bench because I don't care. I've got 5 years contract and you're going to listen to me.
Speaking of fifth and five and the number five, he's still fifth favourite with this Chelsea side to finish in the top four. What would success look like to you, Frank, considering the timing he has come in?
Well, it's never late. And I said that before, maybe the sacking of Tuchel makes things change. And we see that everything can put any team in trouble. You know, how Liverpool's going to react after the loss against Napoli yesterday or Tuesday. So we'll see, you know, how it's going to work for the other team as well. So Chelsea has a time to react. And yes, it's possible to finish in the first four. No doubt about that. The season is still long, but there is a time to react and it's now.
What do you think success is for Chelsea this season?
Success is quite simply top four. And I'll go even further to Frank's point. There's only six games gone this season. We are talking about a team that had finished third last season. There have been changes. There have been problems. If he comes in, gets into the top four, even somehow manages to keep the top one or two, depending on whether Liverpool can figure themselves out, within touching distance, I think that is an incredible return for Potter in what is a season we're not quite sure what to make of Chelsea. Mm-hmm. Just yet.
It's going to be interesting to see. There's a lot more talk about this on the latest Gab and Jules podcast. Make sure to download that wherever you do get your podcasts. They delve a little deeper into the situation at Chelsea right now.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. The paper's reaction to Liverpool's loss to Napoli at the Stadio Maradona in their Champions League opener, 4-1 it was. Neapolitan nightmare, one of the headlines. Obviously, Naples hasn't been an easy place for Liverpool in recent years. Luis Garcia joining us now to talk more about this result. Luis, what happened?
Well, everybody's trying to find an explanation what happened to this Liverpool. Definitely, it's not the Liverpool we all know. It's true that we enjoy watching them. When they are full flow, with that high pressure, with that intensity. We heard many times Peter, the second coach, saying that we don't press, we chase. But we haven't seen that from Liverpool this year. We are trying to understand if it's because they've been working and challenging for every single trophy from the past 4 or 5 years. And at the moment, it's not easy after a little bit of rest that they have during the summer. Connect again, getting back to what they were doing last year. It's not easy to after losing two major trophies last year, to reconnect again and start playing like and nothing happened. So I'm not trying to make excuses, but it's true. They look tired, and not only physically, but also mentally. And that's something that Jurgen Klopp is trying to explain in some ways. They had a few injuries in the middle of the park. The players up front, they don't look sharp. We've seen that Mo Salah is not the same Mo Salah that we've seen in the past 5-6 years. Darwin Núñez still needs adaptation in the middle. In the middle of the park, Fabinho, that is normally the player who gives the balance, maybe is not adapting to the players he's playing next to him. Only Harvey Elliott has been fresh. You look that when he's on the ball, he's always creative. But I think that you could see that the defense is not pushing as high as before. The pressing is not working. And then when you play against a very good Napoli, that they've been one of the best teams in Calcio in the first few weeks of the competition, you know that you're going to suffer. I expect a good reaction. I know that they're going to be rotation. The manager is trying to analyze what has been happening. I'm sure the man managing is the best thing that Jurgen Klopp has been doing the past few years. So it's very important that he understands the player, and the players need to understand that they need to change their mentality and try to bring back the basics that they've been doing for many years.
What did you make of him taking Mo Salah off in the second half, Luis? Was that a message, or was it because he needs some rest?
No, I think I'm not thinking that he's trying to send a message to Mo Salah. Of course, you can see, and I'm sure that Mo Salah knows himself very well, and you can see that he's not beating players on 1v1s. He's not arriving to the box. He's far away from the box, actually, sometimes too wide, not close to near the box where he is very dangerous. And I think that it's just to make the rotation, try to bring fresh legs on the game. The team needed. I think the team played a bit better in the second half because you could see that it was closer to on the pressing. The team was just in 20-30 minutes, the 30 meters, the normally what they do. And I think that Mo Salah needed a rest. I think that it's very important that players understand that it's very difficult to play 70 games they played last year. And they're going to be rotations because also there is a World Cup in between and some of the players are going to need some rest.
But how can this be fixed, Stevie? Because you're talking about the squad needing a refresh. Yes, obviously there's injuries, but before it goes too far, how can it be corrected?
Well, unfortunately, there's not an easy answer. It would be great if they were in a position where they could change the personnel, but they're not. And so when you can't do that, it's down to coaching. And there's no question, you have to sympathise with Liverpool as far as the injuries. You know, you're having to play James Milner, who signed a contract basically to be able to give other players a rest and come on for half an hour. That's what James Milner signed a new contract for. And that's why they asked him to do it. But he's having to play in your biggest game of the season. And Harvey Elliott is a rookie. This guy's learning his trade. And so when you've got two of your three midfielders in the positions that they're in, one with experience and one with too much experience, then the engine room is going to be in trouble. For me, the biggest problem is the back line. And that's down to coaching. Because the back line looks as though they haven't worked on any sort of defending since the start of the season. It's a complete and utter mess. And if they can work on that, you know, it looks like there'll be no games this weekend. I'll tell you what, Liverpool should be in every day. They should be on the field and walking through situations, walking through things that have gone wrong, and walking through things that they've done well. You know, it's not... It can't all be negative. You can't just keep throwing this is wrong and this is... You have to get the positive things back as well. And that means that you have to go through positive things that you did previously. So this is all coaching. And in my opinion, the biggest amount of coaching that he's doing is in the back line. Because right now, you've just got to get on with what you've got in the middle of the park. There's nothing you can do about that.
Well, the morning after the night before, Trent Alexander-Arnold has come under a lot of criticism, Luis. What have you made of the situation with him so far, and even his body language in the games?
Yeah, totally true. I think body language says a lot about players, and much more when you are outside watching them. Alexander-Arnold is a special player, very specific. We understand that his quality, his ability to touch the ball is just fantastic. Sometimes when he's on the ball, he forgets that he's a right back, and right backs are to defend. The first thing that a right back should do is defense. That's the first thing that you have to apply to the team. But this Liverpool is different. Normally, these two players, Robertson and Alexander-Arnold, they are so wide, so going ahead, up front, and the last third is trying to bring. I saw the other day, one stat that they, in between the two of them, I think they got 96 assists, something like that. That's crazy. That's an amount that normally... not even strikers or midfielders can have. And that's something very important. That's something that is so positive for the team. But the first thing that I've seen in the past four or five games is that there is a big gap in between the centre-back and the right-back over there. And I understand that when things are not going in the right situation, that's what happened with Liverpool, because the team is wide open. The lines are not as close as before, because mentally you don't arrive, or because it's just the start of the season, so you are not as fresh as you will be in 2-3 months, then the legs are not following. And I've seen a couple of footage where he is running back every single time. There's one at the weekend against Napoli that is Harvey Elliott arriving earlier than him. So they need to understand that when you are in trouble in these kind of games, it's better to stick at the back, yes, hold at your position, be aware, and maybe be important 2 or 3 times. Not try to be important 10 or 12 times, because in one of those situations, you're going to leave a lot of space at the back. And Napoli knew that, and that's why a lot of the counter-attacks, they were arriving from that side.
Do you agree with that, Frank? What are your thoughts on Liverpool's defence so far?
Well, it's been a concern, that's for sure. And I already talked about Van Dijk, that I don't recognise as a Van Dijk that we used to know before his injury. And it's not due to him. He has to recover. They couldn't find the chemistry. That's the big secret of Liverpool. And that's what it's where, you know, Mr. Klopp has to become again a magician. He has to find again how to make sure that the team is going to play 100 miles an hour all together vertically and at 100%. In their mindset. That's the thing. When I see the body language of Van Dijk, of Alexander-Arnold, and also Salah, I realize that the players are not ready to make the effort that Klopp is demanding for in order to get that game. And to compensate the right and the left back, you have to have a Fabinho or Thiago at 100%, which is not the case either. So it's not only one player, it's not only one line, it's all the lines we're not capable of doing the effort that the football that Klopp loves is demanding. Right now, that's the main concern. And because they're not fresh, I'm very concerned about Liverpool this season, because in the middle of the season, you will have the World Cup. So how the players can get a rest, how you can rotate because you have injuries, and how you can change the mood of the players if you don't have the choice of changing and resting the players. That's going to be very difficult this season, I think, for Liverpool.
Luis, there's a feeling among many right now that this Liverpool side just isn't the same without Sadio Mane. Stevie was adamant on yesterday's show that it's nothing to do with Sadio Mane going. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I totally agree. At the end, one player, of course, he can make the difference in one game or two games. We are talking about a group effort. We are talking about not all the lines are working as the way that they were doing before. We're talking about the line of defense, and we just heard Van Dijk is not the right man at the moment, not the one that we know. Robertson, has been a lot of talks about him. Alexander Arnold, you go into the middle, there is no players. It is not about one player or two players that they are not doing the right things. I think it's about the concerns about the whole team. The team is not working the same way that it's been doing. Not because they don't want, not because it's not the desire or the commitment. It's not because of that. It's because at the end, sometimes, again, we forget that these are human beings and they are a problem. And when they see this situation, it's not easy to get back off. Listen, let's change again and let's start running the same way. Let's try to change the player. Let's start to make 20 runs or 50 runs. It's not about that. It's about trying to regroup everything, to go to the basics, to start from the back. I think Steve just mentioned, let's go and work on the defense. Let's tie it up there and then start building up, because they still having the same quality up front. And with Darwin Nunes, is a fantastic player. Luis Diaz showed it last year. Diogo Jota, when he arrived to Liverpool, it was fantastic. And of course, you got the top scorer on Mo Salah. But the first thing first, start the build-up, start giving the confidence once again to the players that it looks like they have lost at some point. And after that, when you have that confidence, the mind will do the rest and they will push you and they will start running the same way that they've done it before.
Okay, let me get a quick yes or no from all of you. I'll start with you, Luis. Do you have any concerns that Liverpool won't finish in the top four come the end of the season?
No, no concerns. I think they will go into the top four.
Frank?
No, I want to believe that Klopp's going to sort the problem out. And I want to believe that because of the talent of the player, they're going to sort the problem out as well. So they're strong. Comparing to the 18 others, you know, except Man City, I can trust them that they can finish at least second or third.
There was a tiny pause there from Frank. I noticed a tiny pause before he gave his answer. Shaka, where are you standing?
My short answer to that question is not yet. They've given me nothing to suggest that they're top four worthy, but just given who they've proven themselves to be, and I still think can be, I think they just about get in.
Stevie, yes or no?
I think they'll just about get there.
So no worries. No concern.
I wouldn't say.
Does that look like a face who's worried? Does he look worried at all?
Is this the face of concern?
A little bit. A big bit.
Suppose you have courage in your convictions.
There's no courage. There's no courage in them convictions.
I think it might be a not yet from Stevie as well. All right, let's talk about some more Champions League games that we did see. We saw a strong performance from Ousmane Dembele in Barcelona's 5-1 win over Victoria Pilsen. After the game, Xavi said, he is a dagger on the wing. I've seen a few players with that ability in one-on-one situations. Sorry, he's seen few players with that ability in one-on-one situations. He is at the level of the best version of Neymar. Luis, you're a big supporter of Dembele. You were right all along.
It's still not right because he still needs to be consistent. And I think that the moment he's showing that there is a fantastic player, Xavi knows because he works with him every single day. It's true that we've been talking a lot about him, if he should go because of his consistency, because he gets injured very easily. I think no one doubted about his ability and his speed and his way of scoring goal and assisting. And I think it's surprising us all a little bit because the way he's playing every single weekend is just fantastic. That consistency is there. The assisting moment is just fantastic. That partnership that he's doing with Lewandowski is brilliant. And now he looks hungry to scoring goals. In the game of yesterday, we've seen a couple of times where he was trying to go forward and try to shoot from a long distance, trying to score goals. That's something that he has to add to his abilities. But definitely he's a player that you cannot find in many places. Xavi's comparing him with Neymar. I think with speed and ability, yes, it's true that Neymar has got that skillful that very low players can have in the history of football. But definitely he's giving so much to Barcelona. And I'm happy to see that, he's working with for Xavi.
Stevie?
Do you know what Xavi should have said? I think the penny's dropped. That's what he should have said. Never mind this nonsense about he's the best version of Neymar. He should have said the penny's dropped. This guy, as a professional footballer, to players who have been professional footballers, well, he was getting up my nose. You know, the opportunity to play at Barcelona over the last 4 to 5 years, the amount of money he was getting, he's been given everything. And all he's done up until 6 months into last season is just fritter it all away. And now it seems like the penny's dropped.
Well, Xavi had a lot of confidence in him and backed him from the beginning.
Well, he's going to see that from the beginning anyway to try and get the best out of him. And he is getting the best out of him. And what we're seeing now, you know, Louis and I had this conversation at the start of the season and I was bashing Ousmane Dembele. And I was bashing him rightly so, because a little spell of 6 months over a 5-year period isn't enough to convince anybody that you're a world-class player. But I'll say it again, it looks like the penny's dropped, because that's exactly what he's doing. Every time he gets the ball, you think he's going to do something. So, keep continuing to do it.
In the French national team picture, Frank, how's he viewed?
Well, you have to consider that you have many talented players who play with the national team, but he had a chance, he was there, and he can go back, that's for sure. If he can prove that he can last long and not be injured before the World Cup, yeah, he has a chance if he keeps on assisting goals and scoring goals. Yeah, it's a possibility because the talent is there. I agree. Offensively, what he does with his right foot and left foot, he doesn't even know if he's a left-footed or right-footed. He has the talent of maybe a Neymar, I don't know, but he has a real talent. Now he has to work there. It's only there for him. You know, how he replaces himself when he loses the ball and how he behaves professionally to make sure that he's going to last longer. 5 games, guys, this season. 5 games. Yeah, we can talk about consistency of 6 months because of the last season. But it's only been 5 games, so I'm going to wait a little bit longer to judge his performances, because the only way to judge his performance, is to see him playing and playing and playing and being good and being good and being good.
OK, let me just quickly, before we move on from Barcelona, ask you, Luis, about Robert Lewandowski, because Xavi said he is in love with the player and it's about more than his hat-trick, it's about everything else he does. You can't really argue with him, can you?
Not much. I think we are all in love with Lewandowski. We used to like him when he was for Bayern, and now that he's in Barcelona, of course, everybody is enjoying, because he looks a professional, he looks a teammate, he looks a player of the team. He's helping everyone. I saw the other day just going to Ansu Fati to tell him, listen, keep going and everything. That's a player you want in your team, and definitely we all know what he's capable of. When he's near the box, he's so dangerous. The volley of the other day, yesterday a hat-trick, so easy for him. He's got his football intelligence so much that every single time that he's near the box, you don't know what is going to happen, because yesterday they were passing the ones when he scored the 2 goals. So I think he's just a fantastic player and a fantastic fit for this Barcelona. Having players like Dembele, like Rafinha, like Ferran Torres, like Memphis Depay, players who can assist him, who can fit him with balls, I think he can score 30-plus goals this season in La Liga. And, well, we'll see if he can continue doing the same in Champions League.
Talking about important players for their team, Real Madrid may have got the win over Celtic, but the victory was dampened somewhat by that injury to Karim Benzema. As we take a look at their upcoming schedule, there's been conflicting reports on how long he is going to be out for. Some saying a few weeks, some saying a month, maybe more. So we're seeing they've got Mallorca next, then it's Leipzig in the Champions League, and then it's El Derby against Atleti. And you just wonder, even if he's not at 100%, do you even risk him for El Derby, Xhaka?
I think that depends a lot on what happens in the next couple of weeks, and not just about Benzema or Real Madrid. It depends on how Atleti go, it depends on how Barcelona goes, and what is... and also what happens in the Champions League and how much wiggle room you have as far as that goes. If Real Madrid continue winning without him, then I see absolutely no reason not to. But that's, again, speculating some 3 or 4 weeks out when so much else, I think, changes that decision one way or the other.
So he's obviously so important in this Real Madrid squad, Luis. We don't even need to remind anybody of that. So how do they plug that gap when he's not there? Who needs to step up in his absence?
Well, I guess he has to be Hazard. I mean, the other day he played a few minutes, he did well, he scored a goal, and he did also give an assist. He's a player who everybody's been expecting to step forward. I think that Ancelotti mentioned in the beginning of the season, are you going to have someone else in place of Benzema to give him some rest? He said, well, we go Hazard and he has to be the one. I think Asensio is another player who can also be linked, Rodrigo, but it's a totally different player. I think Benzema is not only the number nine, he's not only one of the top scorers, but he's the link in between the midfielder and the strikers. He's also the leader of this team, and well, I think they're going to miss him a lot. We'll see how long he's going to be out. The thigh muscle injury is a very tricky one because he's the one, is his right foot, is the one he used the most. So I'm not sure if they want to risk him for El Clásico or wait for Osasuna, I think, is the next game. So we'll see what happens. But definitely Real Madrid is going to miss it so much because he's been key player, not only last year, but also in the start of this season.
Frank, why were you laughing when Luis was talking about Eden Hazard stepping up?
Now, I don't know, even if I'm fond of Eden, you know, when you disappear for 3 years, it's only in a movie when you come back and you are successful. You know, in the football world, I've never seen that. Yeah, it's hard. It's so hard to be truthful. I mean, you have to be according to what we see. I mean, when a player starts to go down, and especially when he reached 30 or above it, it's almost impossible to go back to the rhythm, to go back to who you were. I don't believe in miracle. I really hope that Eden is going to do well enough to replace, in a way, Karim Benzema. But I have doubts, really, big doubts.
I'll tell you a Frenchman who's doing really well. And in limited minutes too, Antoine Griezmann doing it once again for Atleti in that game against Porto, doing it late as well and looking very happy, Luis, when he did score, celebrating with his coach. This is such a strange situation. How hard or easy is it to be doing what he's doing right now?
It must be very, very hard, Kate, to be honest. To be in that situation when you know, I'm guessing that they have talked, they have arrived to an understanding that, listen, this is the situation that it is, we cannot do all the way. Something that I never seen, a player who cannot play because the club is going to need it to pay more money to other clubs. So when you are talking about a very important player, a player that I think is a top scorer at the moment for your team, and he's been so clinical in the last month, it's a very strange situation, very difficult for the player, and that's why I think he was celebrating, grabbing the badge of Atletico in Madrid and hugging his coach, because I'm guessing that they have talked, they have arrived at an understanding, and the best way to do it is when you are on the field, try to do your best, and I'm going to try to bring you every single time that I can because I know that you are a key player for us.
Frank, how does this affect the French national team? Because he's not playing as many minutes as he may be, but then when he is coming on, he's doing really important things for his side. So how is that going to be viewed in the national team?
Well, I'm guessing that he has a communication with Didier Deschamps about this situation. I mean, there's nothing he can do. You know, he cannot play because if he plays too much, Atleti will have to pay lots of money. So he can be forced, even if he does good, he can be forced to go away or to come back to Barcelona or whatever. I don't know what to do in that situation. And that's going to be complicated for him until, you know, they find a solution. I want to know who defends, you know, Griezmann in that situation, in that contract, or who defends Atleti, or who put that in the contract. I mean, that's absolutely insane to see that a player with the talent of Griezmann cannot play because otherwise the club will have to pay. So why he hasn't been sold out or cancelled in a previous time? So now, of course, it's a concern for the national team. But, you know, Didier Deschamps proved many times, and especially with Giroud, that even if you play only 30 minutes, you can have it stressed. And Griezmann is an important player for the national team, so I guess he will be with the national team in the World Cup and he will have a little bit more time to show his talent.
And we'll see how many minutes Antoine Griezmann gets this weekend as we have a whole slate of action in La Liga coming up for you. Atleti will be in action against Celta on Saturday, but all of these games, as always, are available on ESPN+. Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Manchester United's start in the Europa League did not get off to a great start. Manchester United losing 1-0 to Real Sociedad. However, it was a controversial penalty decision, the difference between the two sides in this one. Real Sociedad's first ever victory against English competition in European football. But what were your thoughts on what you saw from Manchester United, Stevie?
I'll be honest, when you mentioned the game, the only thing that I've got in my head is Ronaldo clean through and getting caught by two players. That's kind of what springs to my mind. And he did have another, he had a couple of other chances, not as good as that one, but there was just something missing. That's what I think about when I think of this game. There wasn't much in it between the two sides. Not that many chances in the game. But that's the only thing I can think of. The fact that Ronaldo was clean through and looked every one of those, 36, 37 years.
Ronaldo aside as well, probably wasn't the best performance, even with the controversial penalty from this Manchester United.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. And for what it's worth, I did not think it was a penalty at all. And I have to admit, I was shocked that the VAR didn't overturn it. I could maybe sympathise with the referee giving it the first instance, but I don't know how you see that and not overturn it. That being said, it felt like a Europa League game being played by a team that are better than the Europa League, and as a result, take it almost as a little more than a glorified friendly. A lot of changes, never really played with the kind of tempo that you would expect or you've seen from them of late, and that's it. Nothing really to phone home about.
No, I'm not going home to rewatch it. Put it that way.
Okay, but you know, shouldn't some of these players be trying to prove themselves to their new manager, Stevie? Shouldn't you have expected more from them?
I don't think you can say that they weren't trying to do well. I just think that right now, United for me is not about open attacking football. It seems to be kind of, let's just be competitive. Let's be solid. let's, you know, we've been working on some things. You know, it's not opening up, battening up the hatches and going for it. It seems to be a little contrived and a little too much thinking going on. You know, you can look at Klopp's rock and roll football and you can look at the opposite side of, right, let's just make sure that we're compact and we're doing the things we're trying to do. And, you know, there's nothing entertaining about it. There's nothing exciting about it. And it's hard to point the finger at Ten Hag and complain about that, considering where they've been and the performances they've had.
To your question, though, Kay, I mean, the only players who I thought had anything to prove were all defenders. And I honestly don't think Manchester United were bad at all at the back. I don't think that De Gea was left exposed. I can't think of a save that he had to make. Outside of the back four, you know, who are we talking here? Eriksen, he's got nothing to prove. Casemiro, right, okay, he's not been able to get into the Manchester United start lineup, but we are talking about Casemiro here. He's got nothing to prove. And then either a young or very aging attack for Manchester United. I just don't think that there was a lot to look for or be critical of, in all honesty.
Frank, it was a tough call that went against him, though, on that penalty, wasn't it? Obviously, it was David Silva's shot. It seemed to come up off the knee and onto the elbow of Lisandro Martinez, who was turning away from the ball at the time.
Yes, exactly. I think it's a harsh decision, and I would have never given a penalty because Lisandro Martinez goes to block the ball. Of course, he dives in a way, you know, to make himself a little bit bigger. But the ball hit his thighs first and then his elbow. And on top of it, when he's hit by the ball, Silva is only 2 yards away. So there is no time to react and take your hands off the before the ball hits you. So it's a harsh decision because it doesn't make his body bigger or bigger than he is. It shouldn't have been a penalty. To go back to your question, I think what I saw the most, I was waiting to see the players who are not really involved in the Premier League since the beginning of the season, how they will react to in the game when they start. Ronaldo, Casemiro, Maguire, Lindelof, and I didn't see much. Maybe Maguire was the only one who tried, but the three others, I was quite disappointed by their performances.
Meanwhile, Arsenal got their Europa League campaign off to a winning start against FC Zurich. 2-1, their game finished. They're 3 points at the top of the table, and it was a good showing from Nketiah and Marquinhos as well in this game.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
Stick around,
all mine.
Because these two will be part of the team on Extra Time answering your questions.
When's your Christmas
Luis and
party?
Frank too. That's up next. Welcome to the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Shaka, Stevie, Luis and Frank with us. Just giggling actually earlier because we were talking about Stevie watching Liverpool games. It really is quite the experience if you do watch one with him. You have to stay quiet, especially if you're his wife. What does your wife do when you watch him one at home?
Well, so I'll go up the stair out the road because I'm just daft.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
yes.
She can't help herself, right? So if we're getting beat and things are not going well, she'll bring me a cup of tea and a biscuit, or she'll bring me breakfast, you know, if it's an early kickoff. Instead of just keeping away, so she'll come up and she'll open the door and it'll be like, we're getting beat 1-0 or 2-0 or something. And she can't help saying something. And I'm just sitting in the I'm ready to explode.
It's actually
and she'll,
tense.
Well, she'll go, I'm sure they'll come back in the second half. You know, something like that. I'm like, ah. And I can't say anything because she'd be nice enough to bring me a cup of tea and my breakfast. And I'll be like,
oh, goodness me.
Drives me insane.
Poor Eleanor. All right.
Oh, God.
Guys, did you ever experience your head coach being fired early in a season? What was the mood like in the locker room? Were you worried about a new coach and his staff coming in and doing a major overhaul, resulting in a big change for yourself? Luis is nodding there.
Yeah, a little bit. I found myself in that situation, and it depends if you are playing or not. In my occasion, I was playing, so I wasn't very happy because when you are playing with your coach, the one is at that time, you don't know what is going to happen with the next one, and it happens that I didn't play at that time. So, yeah, it could happen either way. But every single time there is a new coach, everybody kind of bring the A game once again, start giving 100%, start pushing themselves because they know they're going to have a chance. But, yeah, definitely is nothing, no good news most of the times.
Are you being all diplomatic, Luis, and not telling us when that was and who that was?
No, I'm trying to be diplomatic.
All right, fair enough. Frank?
I went through that situation when I was in Strasbourg where the coach signed, and I think 4 months after he was sacked because it didn't work, the atmosphere in the dressing room wasn't good. And it's a weird moment you go through because you don't understand. You know, you have a project, and I was a captain of Strasbourg, and everything was right with me, with the coach. But some players who didn't play went through a revolution, you know, to make sure that he was kicked out and he'd been successful. Well, it didn't help to play better, but it happened. But I remember Ruud Gullit being sacked at Chelsea. It was a little bit longer after, but just to say, you know, you don't understand, because the morning you see him, we are training, we had a training session, and at midday, it was 1 p.m., he called me and said, well, I've just been sacked. I said, how come? We are third in the league, qualify for the semi-final of the European Cup, qualify for the semi-final of the League Cup, and you are fired. He said, yeah, I don't even understand. So it was a weird, very weird situation, and if we know a little bit better about that, it's still, for me, some answers that I never had why Ruud Gullit was sacked, because it wasn't about the results, was it just about maybe money or some men who didn't play and wanted him to go.
Stevie, you've been in this situation, right?
There's a couple of different things swirling around my head that are not sort of... I mean, I guess the worst one personally for me would be when I went to Notts County from Liverpool to play and to be a coach under Howard Kendall. And it was actually towards the end of the season, and he got the sack about 7 weeks after I got there. I'd moved the family and everything from Liverpool down to Nottingham, because we had this project that we were going to, you know, the team was going to be getting relegated, and the next year we're going to bring them back up, and we're going to do this. And this was the next change in my career from a player to a coach, and everything was all sort of exciting and just big changes for me and my family. And then, 7 weeks later, he got the sack. And the guy who was in charge, the chairman, was let's just say he wasn't a very nice person.
Let's just say
I'd actually took over for the rest of the season, and at the end of the season he said thanks very much, but I'm bringing, and somebody else came in, and I wasn't even a coach anymore. I was just a player, and then a new coach came in. I was like, ah.
Did you ever have that situation, Chaka?
A couple of occasions, but neither of them were results related. Kevin Keegan at Newcastle, that was more about Newcastle wanted to float on the stock market and whatever happens upstairs, and he ended up leaving. Kenny Dalglish came in. I kind of knew that the writing was on the wall for me once Kenny came in, though I saw the remaining 18 months of my contract. And then the same thing happened to Harry Redknapp at Pompey. He fell out with the owner, Milan Mandarić, brought in a director of football, and he and Harry didn't see eye to eye at all. And Harry ended up leaving. So he wasn't sacked because of results. He just felt that the director of football, I can't remember his name now, was undermining him, and he just picked up and left. And again, it was probably another 18 months before, probably the end of that season. I left. My contract was up. So I left and went back to West Ham. So, yeah, it happens.
It does happen. Frank's been waving his hands about. What was that about, Frank?
Yeah, I completely forgot. But when I left Chelsea and went to Marseille, I think I beat the record of having the coach the loudest time in the world, you know. I signed for Marseille. We had the first training session. Tomislav Ivic was the coach. And I came to the dressing room. And he said, "Well, Frank, they're so pleased to have you, you know, and I hope we're going to do well." We finished the training session. He was sacked. I swear. And he came back to me and said, "Frank." He came back to me and said, "Frank, it was a real pleasure. Bye-bye. I'm being sacked."
I can't tell you. All right,
next question. For Louise, seeing that Dembele is outplaying Rafinha and they are both left-footed, do you think Ansu Fati should be starting on the left side opposite Dembele?
Well, I think that Dembele at the moment is playing in both sides. I've seen in the first two games of the season, and after the water break, I don't know, maybe it was just that moment, they swap position. Rafinha went to play to the left side, Dembele to the right side. And that happened a few times. The good about Dembele, he can play in either of those positions, and he can be also very dangerous. So it's true that when he plays on the right side, he kind of enjoys going inside. So Rafinha also the same way. But we've seen Rafinha also putting some good cross from the left. I think the good about Barcelona at the moment is they got so many options. Ansu Fati, I think that they are looking after him. They are giving him time. They are starting giving more options, more minutes, because they don't want that happen what it happened last year. They rush him to start playing. And now that they got options with Rafinha and Dembele, I think it's very important that the first one, needs to understand that it's going to take time to get back to his fitness, to 100% fitness. And of course, when you have players like Rafinha and Dembele, you're going to use those moments to shine. And I think he's done it a couple of times in some of the games. But also Ansu Fati can play also as a replacement of Lewandowski as a center forward. He played there also quite often. So I think that Rafinha and Dembele are going to steal their the two players that Xavi is going to use the most, and then the other ones are going to be rotating depending on the games.
Poor Xavi. That's one of those good headaches to have, right?
All right.
Stevie, start bench or sell?
Oh.
Haaland, Lewandowski, Benzema.
Good luck.
Man.
I don't want to be
well,
in
you
it.
Can't sell Benzema.
Okay.
Yeah, who are you going to sell? Who do you sell?
Well, you can't sell Benzema because you wouldn't get anything for him. Nobody's going to. If you sold Haaland tomorrow, you could probably get 300 million.
Oh, this is a smarty pants answer.
Yeah. It's not a smarty pants. Well, it's a smarty pants question, isn't it? Let's be honest.
So, money aside.
Listen, if I'm picking a team tomorrow, I'm starting Haaland at centre forward.
Right.
Put it that way.
Who's on the bench?
Well, I'm going to go on the bench, Lewandowski, because Benzema's injured.
So you can sell Benzema. You can sell
him. Well, he's worth even less if he's injured as well, isn't he? If you don't like that. Yeah, Haaland, Lewandowski, Benzema, in that order.
Luis, do you want to give us a proper answer?
Actually, I'm going to be similar. I'm going to use Haaland the first choice, of course. I'm going to put Lewandowski on the bench and I'm going to try to sell Benzema. Not because I think Benzema is still a key player. It could be very useful for another team. I can get some money to use it. But I think that Lewandowski can give me more goals. And at the moment, I got enough players as playmakers who can feed these two beasts that I got from Lewandowski and Haaland. Goals are the most important, and these two can assure me goals for the rest of the season.
Anti-Madridistas, I'm definitely not going to Frank on that question. Shaka.
Didn't get the answer you wanted, did
you? Yeah, you can.
Do you want to do somebody else?
I'm going to give you the answer.
Sorry, Benzema. Yeah, Benzema.
Go on, Frank.
Lisa, I'm going to give you the answer. I'm going to start Benzema. I'm going to bench Lewandowski. And I'm going to sell Alan because I'm going to get lots of money. Like that, I'm going to buy good players around Benzema.
They're all being
because I can't get the money from Benzema and Lewandowski.
Shaka, you said that Bowen left a trailing leg knowing what he was doing on Mendy, which you think is a foul. What about when goalkeepers come up for a punch and purposely take out the nearby player knowing that the referee will not call a foul? Is it the same thing?
You know, referee's supposed to call a foul. That it's a foul. If the referee doesn't call a foul, that's a referee mistake. So I to that, exactly like that, back in our day, because we keep talking about this, back in our day, and what Bowen did back in our day would never be a foul. Back in our day, keepers would go up for crosses and just drill their knee into the side of players because they knew that your knee coming up was a natural part of jumping and they could get away with it.
Nobody would go near a goalkeeper.
You wouldn't. You absolutely would not. But you don't see that in today's game. Goalkeepers do not instigate that kind of contact anymore because it's not a part of the game. So, to the question, just as Bowen's was a foul, if a goalkeeper does that, it should be called a foul. We had one incident just a few weeks ago. Who was it? A goalkeeper came out and absolutely nearly knocked somebody's head off and the referee didn't call for some strange reason. We all said it was a foul and it should have been a penalty, but for some reason it wasn't given.
This is the same situation. I was laughing the other day at you guys talking about the goalkeeper's balls getting taken and nicked and kicked.
I was driving home laughing because I could see it in my head. Goalie's rooked it, can't they go and get the ball?
Oh, yeah.
Moaning.
That was a funny show. All right, for the guys, did you ever have a teammate who was a practical joker? I know Shaka's answer on this, it's always one of my favourites. If so, what were their funniest pranks? And remember, we are a family show. Shaka.
Oh, John Monker, easily funniest man I've ever met in football. His party piece was whenever you put on the theme music from, what was that movie again? Goodness me. You can leave your hat on. Full Monty.
Yes.
Right.
Which is about a male strip club.
Whenever that music came on, Johnny Monker played the part. Wherever we were.
Okay, I say it's a club. It was actually an act, and it was quite a fun show. It was about working class guys getting.
Classic, yeah.
All right.
Can you try and explain it again?
No.
Clearly seen it a few times.
A few. Louise, what the best practical joker that you played with?
Quite a few ones, but. I have a few with Joaquin, one of them. He's very funny. Pepe Reina is also very funny, and I can tell you that there's one time in the international with the national team in one international break that I tried to make a joke with one of the guys and they weren't happy, and I'm telling you about it was Reyes, Joaquin, Fernando Torres. When I get back to my room, it was destroyed. I had my bed turned over, the blinds were down, bathroom, it was full of the bathroom was full of honey all around the place. So I got scared. I didn't want to get involved in that, and I have to call Fernando Morientes to allow me to sleep with him. And I just flew to the room, but the room was totally destroyed. The guy who was looking after us in the national team was called by the hotel the next day, and the hotel was scared because they thought someone came in to destroy and do something to us. And because there was no one there, they thought that they have kidnapped me or something like that. So it was a kind of one of those jokes. I never ask anything. The next morning, I woke up, I went to have breakfast and never say a word because I didn't want to get in trouble with that gang.
Ah, nice. So you didn't dress them up. But also, Joaquin, speaking of players who like getting naked, Frank, the best practical joker you played with and the funniest pranks?
Christophe Dugarry was a very funny guy. I mean, he couldn't stop teasing everybody, and it could be Zidane or it could be myself, but he didn't care. And he's a very smart person and very, very funny guy. But I had the same story with Luis, with Chelsea, with Roberto Di Matteo. I was sharing the room with Roberto. And one day we came back into our bedroom at the hotel, and they were not even the bed. The bed, they were thrown out from the window from Dennis Wise. We tried to hide it. We could see that easily that it was him. The guy was completely crazy. We couldn't find anything in our room. Everything was thrown out. So he was writing, and we didn't say anything. We didn't say anything. We didn't want to complain. So we kept silence for like a year. And the year after, Dennis Wise was writing a book, and he has all the shit that he was writing, everything in it, you know, everything about the book. And we took it and we threw it from the bedroom or at the hotel. So he had to replace the pages, you know, and read all the things that he wrote about it. And we never said anything. He never complained.
Where did you sleep?
Oh, God. Oh, well, we didn't change. We didn't have the money of Luis Garcia, Liverpool or Bayern or Barcelona. So we went down and we took the beds back to our room, you know? We went to do that.
Stevie, you've got a few in your book. You were one of them.
Pranked? I can't even think.
You got pranked quite a few times, didn't you?
I got done with. Not pranks, like...
Shall we just say they've got to read the book?
Aye. Yes.
Go and read Stevie's book. It's worth it.
Absolutely.
Where's it available, Steve?
I've no idea.
Please tell us what it's called then.
What's it called?
Let's just go with
five lead titles and a packet.
Let's just go with all good bookstores.
Mark Donaldson's throwing things at the TV screen.
Available in all good bookstores near you.
Five lead titles and a packet of crisps.
There you go.
Available now.
I've no idea where you'll get it.
Yeah, you can actually download it on your tablet.
In all bookstores in all bookstores in all in Merseyside area.
Yeah. Let's just go with that.
Anyway, thanks so much for your tweets. We'll do it all again tomorrow. Make sure you join us then. ESPN FC is available. Just a quick reminder, 7 days a week.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.